The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of investment company products carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the investment company. Prospectuses may be obtained from your advisor and should be read in full. All guarantees are backed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer. Withdrawals and death benefits are subject to income tax. If withdrawals and other distributions are received prior to age 59 and a half, a 10% penalty may apply. Shares when redeemed may be worth more or less than the original cost.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, it's just going to be Chris and Justin, actually. Jim is out traveling. He's in, Minsk or...
I think he's in Massachusetts
Australia
now.
Or somewhere. I'm not sure where
no,
he is.
No, Australia. He didn't tell me about that one.
I don't know. I didn't really pay that much attention when he said where he was going. I do know he's going to Massachusetts.
Yeah, Massachusetts.
Maybe Philadelphia or something?
He had an Ed Slott conference last week in Philadelphia, so...
Perfect.
So. Yeah, that's done. Sure, lots of take-homes from that one you guys will be hearing about soon.
Yeah, he always brings back some good tidbits from the Ed Slott program. You'd think that after X number of years, say 10 years or so he's been in the program, that there wouldn't be much cutting-edge news about IRAs, but somehow Ed, in his infinite wisdom, digs something new up, that some type of thing to watch out for, some mistake people make, some new strategy that people hadn't devised before. There's all kinds of interesting things that come out of that program. So thanks for joining us here on the Retirement and IRA Show. My name is Chris Stein. Justin Fundelinski, sorry.
Thank you.
I almost said Fundelinski.
At least you got the first name right.
Justin, yeah, Justin F. Or Youngin, isn't that what we...
Junior, I think is what
Oh, Junior, that's, yeah. I'm lobbying against that, but
yeah,
I think it diminishes your status here in the office, so...
I've got quite the high status these days, huh?
Yeah, so Monsignor Justin.
I'll take it.
So today we're going to have kind of an extension on last week's podcast, last week's show. First, a little heads up for those of you listening to the podcast. This week we're recording this is leading up to Memorial Day, so there is no local radio show on holiday weekends, so there will be no radio show attached to the end of the podcast. So that is typical. We usually keep put those on there because we're usually have some topics that are of interest to a broader audience beyond just Northern Colorado. So we'll always tag our radio show on at the end. This week there won't be one. So only what we talk about here on podcast. So don't think there's something wrong when the podcast ends and there isn't a radio show following it. But either way, we today are going to continue our conversation on bucketing. We talked pretty extensively last podcast about bucketing, and Jim honestly, you and Jim kind of worked most closely on development of the bucketing approach that has kind of been embraced in the office here. I was focused on other things while the development of that goes on. So you'll have most of the details on the current version of the bucketing. But during the show last week, if you didn't happen to catch it, Jim explained in pretty good detail about the four buckets that we envision people kind of building their financial resources or holding their financial resources within that type of structure to, I guess give you, it fits really well with our concept of covering your minimum dignity floor with reliable, secure income, and having the fun stuff in retirement covered by more variable financial resources, things that can might go up and down, by the very nature, the fun things can be altered over time. But by doing it that way, it kind of releases the handcuffs for people. Oftentimes, in the early years of retirement, people, I see it all the time, they kind of get spending paralysis. They're so overly worried about spending too much early in retirement that they end up spending too little, honestly, that there is a cost to spending too little. And that cost is you only have so many years left and you have certain experiences, hopefully, that you'd like to enjoy during your retirement. And if you don't take advantage of that time, you'll reach a point where you can't do it physically or mentally, or you choose not to. The desire isn't there anymore. And that window has closed. And yes, you live out your retirement with plenty of assets, but you've got a lot of assets and not the memories and life experiences. And more so for a lot of people, I'm not ancient, I'm in my 50s now, but I already am consciously doing things, not so much that I know that it is it may very well be a great memory for me, but I know the more powerful thing is I know that I'm creating memories for my kids. So I don't have any grandkids yet, but I can totally see when people have grandkids. I remember times, things that I did with my grandparents when they were retired that I remember to this day. My grandparents are long gone.
Yeah.
And there's things that we did that were substantial and impactful events in my life as a young person. And I cherish those. So those are the things you definitely want to be able to do while you have the energy, time, and resources to do so. And by utilizing this bucketing strategy that Jim described last week, it kind of gives you the peace of mind of knowing that the critical, long-term, never-ending needs are covered, and you can feel free to spend your fun money and create these memories for yourself and other family members. So last show was about bucketing during retirement, right, Justin?
Right, exactly.
And we kind of finished up there, but at the tail end of the last show, just to remind people, Jim mentioned that we should talk about how bucketing kind of starts pre-retirement and how you transition from not having the buckets to having the buckets. And Justin, that's where you can kind of pitch in and
absolutely
give us the current office thought on how people do that.
Well, we were talking extensively, I believe it was last week on the show, that it's that first year of retirement, that first year when you start withdrawing money from your assets, and that's the most risky year for you. And that's why having some sort of bucketing plan in place really makes a lot of sense. Because if just out of sheer bad luck or bad timing, and you start withdrawing money out of your accounts during a down market, it can have a real substantial impact on your overall retirement plan. But the key thing to note there is you can't just, retire and then before you start withdrawing, set up a bucketing plan. You really got to embrace it, I'd say, 5 to 7 years in advance, because if there's a substantial down market prior to your retirement, would you rather have set up some sort of bucketing ahead of time or just continue working? And I think a simple bucketing process for pre-retirement makes the most sense. Who wants to delay retirement simply because of bad market timing? So
yeah, and I think if people want to envision, I'd probably describe it as an upside down V, where if we're measuring the risk of the market impacting your ability to retire in the way you want, is if that risk is illustrated by that upside down V, the very tippy top of that is going to be that first year of retirement. Mm-hmm. But on either side of that, the second year of retirement and the year right immediately prior to retirement are also quite risky as well. And you go down. So as you start to approach that pinnacle, and that's where Justin's mentioning this kind of 5 to 7 year head start, where you're going to start to transition away from maybe a traditional approach to managing your assets and start to create these buckets, if you will. It's because you're getting close to that pinnacle. It isn't that it's just that 1 year that's risky. It just happens to be the riskiest year because your assets are at their greatest point. So any percentage decline in those assets is going to lose the greatest number of dollars, which is going to impact you later on. And you're also starting to, I call it drain, or I sometimes describe your account once you start withdrawing. It's like you're withdrawing blood, you're bleeding, and then the last thing you want to do when that's happening is also have the market take away some of your lifeblood as well.
Better
simultaneously.
To have a small cut than a big cut, right? Yeah,
right. So kind of that upside down V, if you picture that, I think illustrates what we're trying to protect against.
You know, and I find when I'm talking with people and trying to explain this, they just still kind of are geared into that whole long-term perspective, and it all, they have this thought that it all averages out, right? And you know, my answer to that is no. It's a very different scenario because you are withdrawing from your portfolio rather than contributing to it, and it has major impact on the overall returns of that portfolio. Simply, the way returns implement themselves or come about randomly through retirement, you can actually have the exact same average return for, say, 10 years or 5 years or whatever number of years you want. And if you're not adding or subtracting to it, that return is going to be exactly the same. However, if you start withdrawing from it, if you experience the negative returns towards the end, you're going to have a better return rate overall, a geometric return. And if you experience those negative returns up front, you're going to have a much worse overall return rate. I actually just wrote a very basic article to try and help people understand what sequential risk, this is what we're talking about, or the sequence of returns. And I did an exact example of kind of what I'm talking about. I did a 5-year run, and I said, let's just assume a 6% average. And I made up some numbers. I just made them up off the top of my head. And I said, let's do an 18% return 1 year, a 13, a 10, a negative 4, a negative 7. It all averages out to 6%. Mm-hmm. And what I did is I ran the average. Turns out perfect both ways. If I do it from negative to positive or positive to negative year over year, it doesn't matter. So that's why people kind of think, oh, well, in the long run, it doesn't matter. But then I threw in a nice variable of saying, well, you know what? I need to take out 10% of that portfolio over the next 5 years. Let's see how it reacts over the 5 years. And what it did is the first portfolio where the positive returns came up early ended up being 22% higher or greater than the other portfolio. So just over 5 years when you're spending the most.
So all you did was reverse that order of returns. Instead of having those positives at the beginning of the five, you put them at the end. But they're the same five returns.
Exact same five.
It's the only difference is the order in which they happen.
Yeah.
So even if you, where people get trapped in this is they look at kind of average returns over long periods of time. And maybe you are accurate in picking some long-term average that you might experience in your investments. It isn't just about that.
Yeah.
It is not just about that. It actually matters in what order did you get the random returns, because they are random. We never know from year to year what the return is going to be. We might feel comfortable assuming that we're going to get a certain average return over a long period of time. That has been shown to be quite reasonable an assumption to make, but without any information of how, in what order they happen. And that's where people get into trouble. And it also, this kind of reared its ugly head a lot for people in 2007, 2008. People who had retired in 2005, 6, or 7 actually experienced one of the worst possible times to retire, assuming you had investments at the time, because those investments were probably greatly harmed during the worst possible time for you and really jeopardized or changed your retirement experience unless you had other ways to make up for it, like going back to work or something else. And that's what we're talking about here. You never know. In any given year, you might have this goal. The sad part is your parents almost kind of picked for you when you're going to retire.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't choose when you're born, right?
Yeah. You didn't get to choose when you're born. So the day you were born is what ultimately predicted the year in which you turn retirement age. Whatever retirement age it is that you have in your mind, the year that happens was picked by your parents. And so you have no control over that. You also have no control over when the market is going to have good runs of years and maybe bad runs of years. And if the two random things you really had no control over coincide, right, bad returns and turning retirement age, that can be very harmful to your plan, if you will. And so coming up with some protections from that is critical. And many people learned this lesson the hard way in the 2007-2008 financial crisis, as most investments declined substantially. I don't care what the investment was. There were very few that did well. And so there wasn't even really a good safe haven that said, you know, if you were smart enough to pick fill in the blank as an investment, you were fine. Most traditional investments tanked during that time period. And people realized, wow, luck can really turn against you. I happened to retire, and then this happened to occur. And people who'd protected themselves from that weren't that concerned.
Yeah.
But not nearly enough people even. It's one of those risks that I think is an unknown for a lot of people. They don't even recognize that it is a risk, so they don't take steps to protect themselves from it.
I think people get conditioned into that whole, in the long run, it all averages out. You know, that's an accumulation planning concept. And I think this is where Jim would chime in and say, it's accumulation planning can't be used in retirement because you are starting to decumulate. You're starting to remove money, and the rules are different. So that's why distribution planning is so important in retirement. And I'm going to argue because that the riskiness, the most risky part of, you know, this sequential risk, the worst time frame of it is year one. I'm going to argue that it's probably the most risky part is the 5 to 7 years beforehand, because if you don't have that bucketing in place or some assets side aside, which you know, we're starting to call buffer assets after, you know, Wade Fow is calling it that. We used to call it principal protected assets, things that can't lose. And if all of a sudden there's a down market and you need to start withdrawing from your assets because it's the withdrawals that trigger the sequential risk, you're out of luck. But if you've got something that didn't drop at all and can, you know, something you can withdraw from for many years on end if need be, that will, you know, avoid you from taking money from assets that have declined in value, then it's going to make a big difference in the long run. There's no doubt about it.
Right. And that, it kind of buys you time. It buys you time for, you know, we all have seen in the past, and I guess we can assume going into the future, markets are going to go up, markets are going to go down. In general, on average, they go up. That's why investing works.
Yeah,
is that tends to be the trend. So when things go down, they're not perpetually down. They come back, and if you've got these buffer assets that you can rely upon in a down market, then you have the freedom and flexibility to wait for them to recover before you have to touch them, and that's the key. Being able to, it gives you the ability to adjust your timing. To adjust your timing, yeah. Which you normally wouldn't have. It's whenever you are protected from something that gives you the flexibility you might not otherwise have. Being at the mercy of randomness, that makes it so people don't sleep well at night. They don't withdraw money to go on vacation because they're so paranoid about the possible losses that are going to occur. And that's where they get into the problem that I mentioned earlier, and they rob themselves permanently of experiences that they could be having in retirement, which is hopefully what they've been looking forward to doing after they stop working. It's not that they just stop and rock in the rocking chair on the front porch. They're off doing other things that they're interested in, starting new hobbies, maybe doing something work-related, but not doing it because they have to, because they want to, all those sorts of things. And you have all these opportunities. You're young enough and healthy enough to go do them. Now's the time. Now's the time. You cannot change the year in which you have the ability to do those
right.
to coincide with up markets and the, you know, things out of your control.
So when you're healthy, you can't control the markets? That's what you're saying? I don't know. I got a bunch of 30-year-old friends that think differently. I don't know.
True. True. At least I got some time. Right? Yeah. They're 30.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's, well, either way, something that we've developed in our office is a way to address this. And there's lots of different ways to do it. Jim went into a lot of explanation last week about how bucketing is really visualized asset allocation. And we're breaking it down to say, if you need cash or something that hasn't lost at all, then you always have your cash bucket or your buffer asset bucket. So when markets are down, you have something to rely upon. And when markets are up, you can certainly just feed off of your investments and peel back on those earnings. And, you know, in all, the worst case scenario, our retirement plan, as I'm sure you've all heard this millions of times, if you ever ran out of money, which would be, you know, the worst case scenario, you've got a fourth bucket, the last bucket, which is your secure income source, which is an ironclad source of income that will at least give you a minimum dignity floor to live on and survive on and keep you in your home and, you know, give you a decent car to get around on and, you know, maybe just some enjoyment. But you're not going on those big vacations anymore. But the whole point of that bucketing is to make sure that when you have the ability to spend your money and the desire to spend your money, that money is there for you and you're not worried about, you know, the fact that, oh, maybe investments are down 15, 20, or 25% this week. You might be able to just go to an asset that hasn't lost at all and still fund your vacation overseas or something like that. Yeah.
So as we approach, you know, 5 to 7 years out from retirement, what do you recommend as far as the steps people take to, let's say, 5 to 7 years out, they're still traditionally invested in their retirement accounts, brokerage yeah. accounts, that sort of thing, in what we call, you know, traditional asset classes. How do you recommend people start to make that transition?
Yeah, number one is get a retirement plan done, something that focuses on your cash flows and needs that you're going to have in retirement and those desired items that you want to do. So it's okay to say, I want to go on these big vacations up front and stress your plan, but give yourself an idea of what kind of cash flows you're going to need or you're going to want in the next at least 15 years of retirement, we'll call it, okay? But generally, if you're that far along, you can project it forward indefinitely. That's where we get some really important data where we can say, all right, they need this many dollars to survive on year one, year two, year three, whether it's for the required items like paying your mortgage or the desired items like going on vacation or, you know, that gray area of required, it's the taxes, you know, we all love paying those, but you still have to pay them. But making sure that all those items are covered. And we first bring in the secure income and we say, all right, well, they've got a pension or Social Security, and this makes up a certain amount of those expenses. But now we got to start withdrawing. And that's the key. I just ran a bucketing analysis, and I don't look at anything else at this point. I just look at the withdrawal requirements from the portfolio year over year. And it's easy number to find once we have that data. If you have your own projections out there, or you have an idea of what it's going to look like for yourself and you already have those numbers, great. You maybe don't need a retirement plan from us. We're not going to give you the big green thumbs up because we didn't crunch the numbers. But from there, you can say, well, here are my spending requirements. Here's what I need to set aside. And we look label each one year by year. And we'll say, well, in the next 2 years, we're going to probably want to keep that in cash because we want really easy access to it. We don't want any sort of penalty to get in the way or any constraints of getting at it. So cash is number one. And, you know, you may not even dip into that cash hoard in those 2 years, especially if, you know, the investments that you have are funneling other money towards you and you might not actually need it. But if it was down, then you've got the first 2 years covered, easy to access, no problem. The second class or bucket is the buffer asset, or what we used to call the principal protected assets. And those would be, you know, most commonly people can relate to it as a CD, right? Something from a bank, can't go down, but you have some growth potential because bucket one has pretty much zero growth potential. What are you getting in your bank account right now?
Zero.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you round up. Yeah. The point of that is to have the principal protection like cash has, but also offer some growth potential because you might not need these assets for, you know, at least 2 years, but probably longer than that. And you can probably get some returns out of it. So CDs used to be the go-to for something like this. People used to structure laddered CDs for this early on spending and just start, you know, if one expired and you didn't need it, you just roll it over to the next longest one. Other ways that I've seen people do it is using very, very structured bond ladders. You'd have to use very high quality bonds. You can't risk any sort of default, but certainly a good option. Managing those, if, you know, you got to find someone that can do a good job of it, pick the right bonds, things like that. So you're likely going to be paying a solid fee for something like that. But they're nice because they're flexible, and if you need them, you can sell them. But just if you sell them before they mature, you might sell them at a down market. So there is some risk there. What we've been focusing on a lot here is because they're super easy to manage and implement are fixed indexed annuities. And we have a couple different ones that we use depending on the time frame that you have and the type of flexibility that you want. But some you can cash out at any point in time without any penalty. Some you can be very flexible with them, and you can add money to it without adding any penalties to it on the back end. And you can also keep them open for indefinitely and take money out and put money back in. So it's a very flexible one. And then we also have one that has, you know, the least flexibility. It's going to be a longer one, but generally you can get some better returns out of it. So if you're bucketing maybe earlier on, call it 7 years out, you've got that strong 7 years before you're going to even ever have to access this because you're going to be working. You can probably set some funds aside and get a better return on it, but still protect yourself from the downside that market risk imposes on you. So there's lots of different ways to do it. I think, you know, for the most part, we have embraced the fixed indexed annuity side. They tend to return quite well compared to other options, such as far better than CDs. And I think they're easily on par or better than bonds, depending on, you know, what years you're looking at. And they're guaranteed and backed by a third company, an annuity company. So we're very happy with those contractual guarantees.
Which will be the key difference from a CD that has the bank's backing and then also FDIC insurance on those. So that's clearly the safest if you, and this is why it's critical since you want something that is, the whole point of having this bucket in place is to have it for sure going to be there when you need it kind of a thing and not susceptible to market declines. So having it, you know, if there's a third party like an insurance company guaranteeing it, you obviously want to deal with a very strong, highly rated insurance company when looking at that. And there are, once we start dealing with annuity talk, I always feel compelled to tell people there's lots of bad annuities out there. There's lots of good annuities. If you don't know what to look for on your own, make sure that you get competent advice about sorting through the bad and the good, because it's all mixed in there and is not. One of the knocks on a lot of annuities and other insurance products is that they're overly complex. The paperwork is almost impossible for the layperson to understand, and kind of flies in the general in the face of the general advice I give to people that don't ever put your money in something that you couldn't explain to a 10-year-old. This goes a little counter to that, so you have to be, I think, extra careful in those. But certainly, if done correctly, it can satisfy the definition or the needs of this particular bucket.
Absolutely, and I like that you say, you know, there are bad annuities out there. There's no doubt about it. Unfortunately, you know, I came from a banking industry before coming on board here, and you know, I never was really a part of annuity sales or anything like that. But when I got into the industry, a lot of those bad annuities were getting their bad rap at that point in time, and that's all I ever heard about. Just, you know, I'll never touch an annuity. These are terrible things. And I actually came to this office with a pretty negative connotation towards annuities. And it was a pretty quick turnaround once I realized how many different types of annuities there are out there. See, I think a lot of people can only represent one or two different annuities, and it's the solution to all problems, which they're not. And once I found out what they can do and can't do, and I educated myself more thoroughly on it, I found out what a magnificent tool they are in retirement planning, especially when it comes to income annuities, which we're not necessarily talking about here. But the principal protection annuities are fantastic also. I think people just need to understand what you use annuities for rather than just buying into it as some you know, savior to all your investments, because they're not. They have their downsides, but if you know what you're buying it for and it's earmarked for a purpose, there's some true, I guess, good planning around it.
Yeah, we view them as a tool. Just make sure that if you're using them, make sure it's the tool that's necessary for the job that you're trying to do. Where people usually get into trouble is they're using the wrong tool for the wrong purpose, and they get oversold into annuities and as the solution to all their problems, only to find out they really needed a hammer, a screwdriver, and a saw, and that one screwdriver isn't going to do everything for them. So keep those, you know, keep that in mind as you're looking for it. Certainly the more simplistic approach is CDs, but the price you pay there is the returns on those right now are quite low. The good news is interest rates are going up. They are getting better. So maybe we'll get back in 5-10 years to a point where CDs are a more attractive option for this part of the bucketing strategy.
Maybe, maybe.
You never know.
We'll cross our fingers.
Yeah. There were days when you'd get a nice return on a 3-year CD, and it's been a long time since we've seen that. You're young enough to maybe not have much connection to that.
Inflation was a lot higher too, though, right? At that
absolutely.
Time, yeah. So
absolutely,
but definitely some great options out there. I think, you know, if you are worried about the basically bad timing is really what it is. Being born in the wrong year and the markets being down in the wrong year for you, it certainly can happen. It happens. We can all look back on 2007 and 8. Lots of people retiring at that point in time, and you know, is headlines. Retirement's ruined. So
these first two buckets that Justin's been talking about, those aren't things you'd typically hold in an accumulation portfolio.
I don't think so, no.
Right. So those are things that you typically wouldn't have, or from the cash perspective, you might have some in there, but wouldn't be a whole lot. So for most people, everybody's approach is a little bit different, but this is where you've got to start setting things up. 5 to 7 years away, you want to start creating these two buckets, because they're going to give you that buffer or freedom to hold on to your planned retirement date no matter the market turbulence that's going on at the time. So you've got to have that. You've kind of got to, you know, start protecting yourself, if you will, in those years leading up. If you don't, if you get really close to your retirement age, and then the bad timing happens before you can get the buckets in place, it could very well jeopardize your planned retirement date. So that's why we're talking about kind of this pre-retirement ramp-up or transitional phase as we move from just pure accumulation planning to getting ready to do the distribution approach that first year of retirement, which is that kind of what I'm hearing as a summary here?
Yeah, that's perfect. And, you know, do it before you plan your retirement. That's all I have to say because, you know, a lot of people put more time into planning what they're going to do in retirement than planning on how they're going to fund their retirement. And that is a big no-no because if, you know, you're leading up to retirement and there is a down market, you've already got your plans in place. It's going to be really hard to convince yourself, now I got to work a couple extra years. And that's a reality. So if you can get this plan in place 5 to 7 years ahead of time, get your retirement plan in place, it's the best time to start. Mm-hmm.
And setting up those specific numbers, I like what you said several minutes ago, get the first step before assembling the buckets is to get the plan in place. Understand what your needs and desires and goals are. That's going to be the driving force in setting up these buckets. And it's completely consistent with one of Jim's favorite sayings, which is, you know, how can I tell you what to do with your money? In other words, how to put it in the buckets and that sort of thing. How can I tell you to do that unless I know what your money needs to do for you, which is what are you trying to do? What are you trying to make happen in your life with this money? You've got to answer that first part first. That second part first. You've got to answer what do we need this money to do for you? Then you can construct the appropriate layout of how to accomplish that with the assets you've been able to amass. Now, occasionally during that process, we see a disconnect between the goals, the dream that people have, and the resources that they've built. And sometimes it's as simple as, sorry, your dreams are just way too big for the resources that you've accumulated. Other times, it isn't really that. It's a matter of, yes, you should have substantial resources here, but what is the best way we can lay them out to protect you from uncertainty, protect you from sequential risk, make it so that this money actually does do what you want and is structured in a way that you have the peace of mind of being able to actually spend it, particularly in the go-go years, those first 5-10 years of retirement when you still are physically and mentally active enough to go off and do things that tend to be expensive, like travel and a vacation home and a RV maybe and motorcycle. You know, there's a list of everybody's dreams are different, but you're in the best position to do that kind of stuff early on. And once you know everything is laid out and in place, it's a lot easier to write that check. It's mm-hmm. a lot, just from mm-hmm. an emotional standpoint. You know that you can, because you put some plans together. You've identified what you need to do, and you've positioned your money so that it can reliably deliver on what you need it to do. So, anything else on buckets you want to chat about?
I don't have too much more to say. I would just go back to that classic 4% rule. It's, you know, something that's designed to avoid sequential risk, but in reality, it just doesn't play out so well. Yeah, if you were following the rule perfectly year over year, you know, you'd probably be okay. But the reality is you're going to spend a lot more in some years and a lot less in others. And all of a sudden, you broke that rule. And, you know, how do you recover?
So. And the rules like that fall into the box or bucket, if you will, that I consider to be overly simplistic and really only useful for the average person. Usually they put together these studies to have a simple rule that's good on average. And it works great if you happen to fall into that range of average. I would much rather look at someone's individual circumstances, figure out their plan, what might be unique about them and their goals that may not be average necessarily, and then construct things and look at how we can make it happen for them specifically. Yeah. And that's where detailed planning can come in. So
agreed.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us here. Not nearly as many words as when Jim is here.
How'd we clock
so
in
apologize.
Here?
I apologize. Yeah, we're at 40 minutes or so. We could have, covering the same material, we could have easily pushed past an hour if Jim were here.
No. He's pithy. He's very pithy.
But he'll be back next time. He'll have lots and lots to say about the Ed Slott program. I'm going to find out what he ended up eating in Philadelphia, because I haven't been to Philly before.
Oh, no. Good stuff.
Yeah. So I'm sure he'll tell us about the chowder from Massachusetts and all that good stuff. So thanks for joining us here on the Retirement and IRA Show. Don't hesitate to reach out to us if you have any questions. And we'll be back next week with a new podcast.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.